Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, will Congress fully investigate January 6th? Back in February, a bipartisan consensus emerged in Congress about how to seek accountability for the violence at the Capitol. Lawmakers from both sides of the aisle supported the creation of a 9/11-style commission to dig into the many lingering questions about that day. Last week, the House passed a bill to create a panel of independent investigators, but Senate Republicans now signal they will not support it. Bryant Goodman runs the Reese Center on Law and Security at the New York University School of Law. He's co-editor-in-chief of the website Just Security. He joined me Tuesday morning to explain why he believes creating a commission is the best way forward and what happens if we don't get one. Ryan, tell us where efforts stand to create an independent commission to investigate what happened on January 6th.
So bipartisan legislation was passed by the House, and the way I describe it as bipartisan is on two levels. First, that the legislation itself was drafted by a Democrat and a Republican, the ranking member and the chair of the House Homeland Security Committee. So that's Benny Thompson and John Katko. Then it acquired 35 votes of Republicans in the House for its approval and was sent over to the Senate. And now it's in the Senate's hands where it looks very unlikely to go anywhere. The way that I think Axios put it is the Senate is a graveyard for the January 6th commission, that there'll be very few Republican senators that'll vote in favor of it, and certainly not enough, it looks like at this stage, not enough to overcome a filibuster. So that's the state of play. Will there be a filibuster? Is there still a dynamic situation? But as it stands right now, it looks very pessimistic for passage of any such legislation.
So give me a sense of how that commission would have worked had it gone through both the House and the Senate.
The commission would have been split with half of the members of the commission selected by Democrats and half of the members of the commission selected by Republicans, with a chair selected by Democrats and a vice chair selected by Republicans. So evenly split. It would have had subpoena power, but the subpoena power would also be essentially shared or evenly split, in which either side could veto the exercise of the subpoena power. You'd need at least one Democrat with all the Republicans or one Republican appointee with all the Democrats to secure a subpoena, to pass a subpoena request. So that was evenly divided. That was not the way it was originally designed by Speaker Pelosi. So Speaker Pelosi had circulated a quote-unquote discussion draft. Her discussion draft would have given the chairperson the power to issue a subpoena on their own without a majority of the commission members. And that chair, as already mentioned, kind of would have been selected by the Democrats in Congress. So that was one of the many compromises made. The other issue that was very significant and is very significant in the legislation is its quote-unquote its scope. So it really is scoped to deal with January 6th and events leading up to January 6th and refers to January 6th as an incident of domestic terrorism. So that was very important in the sense that one of the arguments against the commission was the idea that it would also focus on Antifa or violence that occurred in the summer of 2020 around Black Lives Matter protests and things like that, and it does not have any of that in the legislation. The last significant element of the legislation that I would highlight, and maybe even, you know, as ambivalent about how to describe it, it might even be the thing I'd highlight first, is a very strict timeline, in that the legislation on its own terms says that the commission must issue its final report by December 31st, 2021. And I can easily see the argument for supporting the idea of this commission, except for the deadline, because the deadline really does interfere with any such commission's ability to do its work. If you just think about how long litigation takes, it's unimaginable to me that the commission would be able to secure a subpoena against somebody who contests it through litigation by December 31st, 2021, and issue their report. You could even think that not necessarily being a poison pill, but that was a very significant compromise in the legislation.
So up until last week, it looked as though things were moving forward. And then the Republicans put forth some of these compromises, some of which Nancy Pelosi was absolutely willing to accept. But even then, Congressman McCarthy said absolutely no.
That's right. And I think it is fair to describe what happened as McCarthy and others, McCarthy in particular, not being willing to take yes for an answer. That there was just such significant compromise that he had essentially deputized Representative Katko to negotiate on his behalf with the issues and conditions that he, McCarthy, wanted. And then I think maybe it was to their surprise that Nancy Pelosi said, okay, we'll meet those conditions. And the other part of it is that the legislation looks very similar, very, very, very similar to legislation that was introduced by 3031 House Republicans in middle January. So they actually introduced legislation for a draft commission. It's extraordinarily similar to that one. If anything, that one gave the commission 18 months to wrap up its work. So there was even more of a compromise than was in the original Republican legislation itself. So that's why it's like, except for one caveat, I would say it sounds like they gave McCarthy everything he wanted. The one caveat is that McCarthy did try to say that the scope should include Antifa and that kind of issue, the commission does not do that.
The other problem I gather for Republicans is that there wasn't an agreed-to deadline, December 31st.
Yeah, it's interesting because Senator Collins on the Sunday show that she was on this weekend registered this as one of her concerns, but the legislation itself is very explicit. It does have a wrap-up time after that point where the commissioners would be able to testify before Congress, but it did require by the letter of the legislation itself that they must issue their final report by December 31st. I could imagine that some Republicans would worry that, yes, that's in the draft, that's in the text of the legislation, but then imagine the chairperson of the commission testifies before Congress or goes before the public and says, we cannot complete our work. We must have an extension of our deadline. I could imagine that would be one of their concerns for like a bit of a wild ball that is not totally in their control because so much power and legitimacy is handed to the commission once it's set up.
And the Republicans were worried about the 2022 elections.
Absolutely right. That seems to be the true underlying factor for them. I don't think these other statements that they've made are really the factors. I think those are pretexts. The true underlying factor seems to be very political. They don't want this commission bleeding into 2022 and undermining their chances to retake the House, for example, and potentially the Senate. And remarkably, there is this strange situation here, and I suppose we'll get into this in the conversation in terms of like what is plan B after a commission. The strange situation is if there is no commission, it's very likely to be investigated by the House. Pretty good likelihood it'll be a House Select Committee, which has even more attention-grabbing, press-grabbing effect. There's no way that committee is going to stop its work on December 31st, 2021. In all likelihood, that will roll right into 2022.
How is McCarthy justifying the Republicans' position on all this?
I mean, there have been different arguments he's made along the way. You know, he has tried to claim that he was blindsided by the work on the House Homeland Security Committee, but a lot of the reporting says that he was well aware of it. In fact, and as I mentioned, that Katko essentially had been deputized by him. So he's made arguments that this is partisan, that Speaker Pelosi did not discuss it with him directly. And, the other one, of course, is there are sufficient ways that this can be investigated by other institutions or bodies, including Congress itself, including the Capitol Police have engaged in their own internal inquiry. including the Justice Department criminal investigations and the media's own investigations. That's the argument he makes. That's the argument Senator McConnell makes. But, you know, just one of many answers that could be made to that is that's not exactly the argument they made with Benghazi. So Benghazi was investigated by at least six congressional investigations. Six. And Benghazi was a very significant incident. This incident was a threat to the Republic and to our peaceful democratic transfer of power. To think that you would not have a commission for that is just extraordinary in terms of where we are as a country.
So is there any merit to the argument that other groups, other committees will be looking into what happened on January 6th and therefore no joint House-Senate committee or investigating group is necessary?
I think one place to first focus on is the Department of Justice prosecutions. I don't think that that in any way, shape, or form is a substitute for the kind of broad investigation that would be conducted by a commission. The Justice Department is looking for crime, and they're looking for crime that can be proven in a court of law beyond a reasonable doubt. That is very narrow. If you think about all of the cases that they've brought right now, hovering around, I think, about 450 prosecutions, they're mainly for people who entered that building. They're not for the organizers, like the chief, the heads of the Oath Keepers, the heads of the Proud Boys, people who weren't present inside the building but were radicalized through disinformation. It's not about the social media companies. The Justice Department is not investigating the social media companies and their involvement in spreading the big lie or helping these groups organize. So many questions like that are just not even being touched. The Justice Department might also have a lot of information about individuals and how they were organizing, and even images of individuals that they'll never be able to bring in a court of law for all sorts of reasons. And so we don't have any formal inquiry into all of that where there's actually very readily available evidence. The Justice Department is also in all likelihood not going to touch on questions like the historic failure on the part of the FBI and on the part of defense. FBI in terms of proceeding, this was an intelligence failure, and the Department of Defense on the day of January 6th, that's not anywhere close to what the criminal investigation is about. So that's one part of it. Second part is if we look at the congressional investigations that are about to take place in the event that the commission doesn't get up and running or there's no commission. A couple things about those investigations. One is just that they're going to be highly politicized. I've been very, very distraught to see the hearings that we have had so far and the ways in which the hearings themselves are being used as a vehicle for some, not all, some Republican members of Congress to spread more disinformation about January 6th. I don't think that would occur with a high-level commission whatsoever. And some of the Democrats are using it for grandstanding political purposes or to mention their legislation or just to speechify rather than to actually interrogate a witness. That would not be going on with members of a commission of great standing who are not legislators or running for office of any sort. So the politicization of the congressional investigations versus an independent commission is, I think, one big piece of it. And then the second big piece of it, I think, is the ability to obtain certain information. And here, I think the 9/11 commission is a very good example of this. There was a House and Senate Select Committee to investigate 9/11, and it failed to obtain very important information, like they never got a sit down with the president and the vice president. They never got any testimony from the National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, and they didn't get the intelligence briefings that the president had received before 9/11, the presidential daily briefs.
Why not?
Partly because I think that there are ways in which Congress is going to run up against a brick wall with the House if they want to actually get the sitting National Security Advisor to testify. As we've seen here with Congress having to litigate with the former White House counsel of President Trump for so many months that now he will testify behind closed doors next week, which is so many months after the Mueller report. I mean, that's so that it even deters them from even subpoenaing the person because they know that it's going to be fought out in litigation. And this happened before with the former White House counsel, similarly. So that's part of the equation. And if it's ordinary politics between the separation of powers between the Congress and the White House, then the White House has says, you know, we have these prerogatives. We're not going to give you the presidential daily briefs. We never have historically. But the 9/11 Commission comes in with a whole other sense of public legitimacy. It's actually not about their legal powers being different. But the book that was written, one of the best books that was written, the Philip Shannon book on the commission, talks about how the chair and the vice chair knew when they walked over to the White House that they had much greater power to get the material and that they thought, in fact, that they were just inevitably going to get it. So whatever the negotiations at the White House, they were going to get what they needed. And they did. And they got everything I just mentioned that the Senate's House Select Committee didn't get, they got. And to me, that is so important for the public record, our current public understanding, and the historical record, independent of any final report. So one can talk about if there would be a successful final report coming out of the commission with a unified body under the commission members agreeing to the final report. That is a good question, but I think independent of that is just the ability to produce this kind of information for the public. An independent commission instead of a congressional investigation, I think, is a big deal. And then one other item to highlight, I think this is going to be starting to seep through in the press. The Biden White House is going to do what executive branches do and the Biden Justice Department across Republican, Democratic administrations. They're going to push back. So when the congressional investigators say we want X, Y, or Z, they're going to push back because they're going to try to protect the prerogatives of the executive branch in ways that I think people don't necessarily anticipate. And another benefit of a independent commission, it's symbolic in a certain sense, is it is legislation. It has to go to the White House to be signed. If President Biden signs the legislation, that in the legislation it commits parts of the executive branch to giving over information, you're in a very different playing field than just Congress exercising its ordinary functions. There's, given that the president himself will have signed the legislation that he has, you know, as of last week, come out in favor of.
More of my conversation with Brian Goodman when we come back.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Here's the rest of my conversation with Ryan Goodman. He runs the Reese Center on Law and Security at the New York University School of Law. He's co-editor-in-chief of the website Just Security. So, going back to the issue of subpoena power, that even a congressional committee could use, are you saying that putting out a subpoena for a former president is likely to get pushback not only from Donald Trump and other Republicans, but from this White House itself?
I would predict it's more likely than not from this White House itself. Many people thought it was outrageous that the Trump White House said that the former White House counsel, Don McGahn, had quote-unquote absolute immunity from testifying before Congress. That was their theory, this absolute immunity theory. And I think it's a fiction. I think that it's a legal fiction, that theory. Lo and behold, there is an Obama-era OLC opinion that articulates absolute immunity for senior White House officials. And the fact is that the idea for this theory is that that person enjoys the absolute immunity of the president, him or herself. So it's hard for me to see how, that's why I think it's more likely than not, it's hard for me to see how this administration, like any other executive branch, would do anything but resist, claiming that it has the same prerogatives, that the same, it's a very similar set of people. There's some of the same people in the Justice Department today that were in there with the Obama team. This is their theory, in part, or their theory that they share. They inherited it from prior executive branches, or administrations, I should say, and then they reaffirmed it. So, yes, I think we're going to run up against that again.
Do you see any possibility that 10 senators, Republicans, might go along with the whole proposal to create this commission?
So I think there is a possibility. I do tend to be a little bit more optimistic about these things, I should say. But what's hard for me to understand in a certain sense is, first of all, a lot of their arguments are weak in opposition. And what's hard for me to understand is, if they have concerns about the legislation, and that's their stated reason for rejecting it, then offer amendments. Then let's open this up. If there are ways in which it could be reformed. There's like some concerns have been raised about how the chairperson would select the staff. Okay, tweak that. make it the chairperson and the vice chair. Senator Collins, according to The Hill, as of yesterday, was in the process of negotiating on the legislation. So that suggests to me that it could be dynamic. And, you know, Senator Schumer has the control over when this issue is brought up. I do think the earlier it is brought up, the less likely it is to succeed. But if he were to wait a while, I think then other intervening events might support the passage of the legislation.
Such as
what's also in the news, the New York authorities indicting Donald J. Trump. If I were to place money on it, I'd say the New York State authorities are going to, and the Manhattan District Attorney are going to indict Donald J. Trump or the Trump Organization at some point this year. Does that happen in the next couple months? Maybe. And I do think that's what truly is at bottom the concern of Kevin McCarthy and McConnell. It's the Trump wing of the Republican Party that they do not want to create a ruckus with or a fracture with. And I do think that's also partly what they're looking for. They're just taking a step back. They don't want to try to push Trump out of the Republican Party. Then he'll take everybody else with him that are his loyal followers. But if he gets run over by traffic, they're willing to stand back and let somebody else do that. That might be the New York authorities. There's also the Georgia criminal case that gets very close to potentially Donald Trump himself for interference in the Georgia elections. Plus a whole bunch of other, you know, litigation against him that are, it's more on the civil side, but that might happen.
Let me understand clearly. You're saying that if New York moves forward and successfully indicts Donald Trump in the next few months, that that could have an impact on the creation of this commission because more Republicans would see that their own lifeblood is not necessarily any longer tied to that of Donald Trump.
Exactly. You described it better than I did, but that is exactly what I'm saying and thinking about. And there have been reports that the Republicans are very watchful of these news stories breaking out of New York because they think it might be very significant for them politically.
How close do you think Cy Vance and the other case are coming to fruition?
So I would think that Cy Vance has to be fairly close for a couple of reasons. One is they have been doing this now for a long time, so they've probably built a strong case. And the second is, by all indications, the fact that the New York Attorney General has joined Cy Vance's investigation is a strong suggestion that she thinks the case is strong, that it's already reached a point that it's very strong, because otherwise she's putting herself out there both to claim part of the success in a important, successful case like that, but she would also lose a lot if they've got a weak case.
Of course, the other point is that Cy Vance's term of office is going to expire as of when?
I don't know the exact date, but I also think it's this year. I would think that, but this is very speculative, he would indict before he leaves and not hand this over to the next person, especially given how much he's invested in it.
And with that indictment, I presume, entail subpoena powers.
Absolutely. And there's even, you know, there was a report that the Palm Beach authorities in Florida have been discussing what they would do with an extradition request. So so there are a lot of people that are thinking this is getting close and there's a strong case for it and they're planning for it. But a lot of information would be then even more so readily in the hands of the criminal investigators in New York.
Okay, let's say none of this happens and Democrats do have to set up their own investigation in a judicial committee, a series of hearings. What kind of power would they have and how different would that be from a full commission?
So I do think that's the most likely. I do think Senator Schumer is probably going to bring this up very quickly and maybe try to put pressure on the Republicans either to take a vote and to maybe make themselves look very bad with trying to filibuster it.
Even though you're urging him to wait.
That's right. So, and then the big question is, I think it's only a choice of two options, really. Do multiple House committees investigate this, or do they form a very new body, a House Select Committee? And there already are six House committee chairs that have issued requests for information from the government for issues revolving around January 6th. So they've already indicated, we're going there. We will investigate this. I should mention that one of those committee chairs used an opportunity recently to say that they have gotten not a single piece of paper, that very close paraphrase of what she said, not a single piece of paper from the Biden Justice Department, just as an indication of what they're going to struggle with in response to their requests, which were issued in March, a joint letter. So I think that the big question is, do they instead do a select committee? I think an interesting part of the select committee is that would be very much in the control of the Democratic leadership. But Kevin McCarthy can then populate the Republican side with people that are going to spread more disinformation and are not going to be looking for the truth and using it in a very partisan way. But Austin Evers wrote a piece for Just Security about this. Speaker Pelosi could actually select, it seems like, Republican members of the House to fill out the positions. And she wouldn't be compromising on Democratic control because there's easily a justification for having a Democratic majority on the select committee because the Democrats are in the majority with a margin. But she could take a couple of the slots and give one to Liz Cheney, for example. So giving this newly created body greater public legitimacy, greater bipartisanshipness that would defeat a McCarthy effort to pollute it and to try to taint it with partisanshipness, because I think that's the goal on the Kevin McCarthy side.
And there you have yet another reason to do this more quickly, because Liz Cheney could be voted out in 2022.
That's right. And the House might flip in 2022, and then you have a commission in the hands of the party that does, you know, that wants to, at a minimum, obscure what happened on January 6th.
What about the issue of the filibuster, which you mentioned early in our conversation? Is that something that, I mean, Joe Manchin has said in the past he would not support doing away with the filibuster. However, he is making sounds to indicate how frustrated he is with Republicans in the Senate who are not going along with this commission. So the question is the filibuster itself at stake here?
I think it is, because this would be the first exercise of the filibuster during the Biden administration. And everything you described, I think, is right. I think, you know, the big question is, will Manchin ever soften his position on the filibuster? Maybe not writ large, not like he'll blow up the filibuster writ large, but maybe he would say, look, on voting rights, something like that. You can't let that be the veto against voting rights that have to protect our democracy. So some way of softening the filibuster in that particular instance. So he's so important that he is saying that, according to Politico, that I think they had gotten the interview with him, they described him as being aghast. That was their word for it. And he said, I hope that 10 patriots will stand up. He's basically saying this is an abuse of the filibuster. So I would think that the Republicans would want to keep him satisfied. There has been this part of me that has wondered whether the Republicans might oppose the commission but not filibuster it. And then it passes. But I think that's a very low likelihood, but it's a possibility. And we also have the situation where it's unknown right now how exactly Schumer will bring it to the floor. He might bring it in such a way that they require the Republicans to do a speaking filibuster where they have to stand up there on the floor of the Senate and engage in something that's very politically, it could be very politically costly and politically embarrassing, and all the video that will be created from it, trying to oppose a commission that is being supported by, you know, members of the Capitol Police anonymously, family members of those who are killed and others, and they would stand in the way. And it's obviously bipartisan. I mean, it was drafted by a Republican, Representative Katko. And for them to have to go through that, I think that's another, you know, open question at this point. Could Schumer and the Democrats, with some Republican support, break the filibuster because it would just be too much for them to withstand that kind of public pressure to try to successfully exercise their filibuster?
So given all you've said thus far, what's your best guess as to how this goes forward?
My best guess is Senator Schumer brings this up very soon, as in this week or next week. He is using it a little bit somewhat to put people on record that he's going to get it to be that they'll actually have to vote on the legislation itself. It might get a few Republicans, but nowhere close to 10. On the Senate side, it dies. And Nancy Pelosi sets up a House Select Committee. That's my best guess as to how this is going to unfold.
Before we close, is there anything more you'd like to have our listeners know about this whole situation?
I guess just taking a step back, it is such a tragedy for our country. I mean, we so many of us talk about how broken our democracy is. This is like a flashing red light that our democracy cannot, after such a threat to our democracy and what was an act of domestic terrorism against the peaceful transfer of power, that we can't stand up an independent commission that is obviously bipartisan to investigate it and produce a record and get at the kinds of reforms that need to be put into place at the FBI and the Department of Defense and elsewhere is such a travesty and a tragedy. So when we talk about our democracy being broken, this is a strong indicator of how broken it is. January 6th was a huge indicator. This is another one that we can't even get this commission through.
And of course, the security around the Capitol apparently is leaving as of this week.
That's right. And I also worry about the security of state capitals as well. I mean, the militia groups are not going away. Many of them were buoyed by January 6th. They think it was in part a victory. And that's also what we don't get with a commission. A commission could put a very strong stamp of illegitimacy around what happened on January 6th. But we don't. It looks like we will not have that.
Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
That was Ryan Goodman. He runs the Reese Center on Law and Security at the New York University School of Law, and is co-editor-in-chief of the website Just Security. And that's all for today. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody, Our engineer today is Mike Kidd. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.